the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Welcome, everyone, to our Monday Lifetime Planning segment of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today, we're going to discuss year-end tax planning for 2021. And if you listened to our last week Lifetime Planning segment, where Jim spoke with Chris Hennessy, they talked about how difficult it is with the tax laws changing under every single administration. Of course, this is great for lawyers and tax attorneys, but it does make things difficult for all of us who are trying to plan for the long term.
Well, Chris, if I take a look at my career, I started my career in the beginning of the 80s, and Ronald Reagan came in, and at that time, the tax rates were 70%, estate taxes were 70%, the exemption was $175,000, and they actually taxed the estate on the death of the first spouse. So Reagan came in 1981 and in 1986 and did a major change to the tax code. He brought tax rates down from 70 all the way down to 28%. Bill Clinton came in, reversed a lot of what Reagan did, took tax rates back up to 39.6, and it was pretty much there for almost 8 years. And then, of course, George W. Bush came in. We had a recession. We had the attacks of 9/11, and there were two waves of tax cuts, which were good, and it made it, from a planning perspective, you wanted to move more towards an S-corp. Then Obama comes in. He changes the tax rates, adds the Obamacare tax, which we're going to get into because that's about to get added on to subchapter S corporations here. So every president has changed the tax law. Some of them have done it in a major way, Reagan being one of them, Clinton being one of them, and Obama. And then probably if, who knows what's going to happen with Biden, but Biden would be, if he got everything they wanted to put through, it would probably be the largest tax increase in history. But right now, Chris, we really don't know because every time they've tried to run the bill on bill, I call it Build Back Bad instead of Build Back Better. It's an inflationary type bill. But every time they try to get it through the House, or now they're going to, it's over at the Senate, which is going to be modified, they change what they're going to tax. At first, they were going to raise tax rates. They were going to raise estate tax rates. They were going to raise capital gains rates. They were going to get rid of a lot of things, and then that got thrown out. Then they were going to have a tax on billionaires. That has gotten thrown out. So let's talk about some of the things we'll get into that we think may pass if they do manage to get this through before the end of the year. If they don't get it through at the end of the year, I don't think we're going to get anything, which would be a good thing, because next year is an election year for Congress. Right now, the ratings are down on the president's party. So who wants to go on record of raising everybody's taxes in an election year? Probably not a good idea.
Yeah, Jim, something that you discussed with Chris Hennessy was tax loss harvesting. So let's get into that as far as year-end tax planning tips on one of the best things that you can do to minimize your taxes for this year.
If you do have gains and you have things in your portfolio that aren't doing well, well, why not sell them? Take the loss, use it to offset the gains, especially if a lot of your capital gains are short-term, because they're going to be taxed at the highest income tax bracket. So there's no benefit to a short-term capital gain. It's taxes ordinary income. So, but here's the one thing you have to remember. It's called the wash rules. If you sell a stock, let's say in you have to wait 30 days to get back into that stock if you're selling it for a loss. If you really think it's about ready to turn around, you could sell your stock and maybe buy a short-term option on the stock if you're worried it's going to get away from you. But you know, you definitely, especially if you have short-term capital gains, if you have anything that is a capital loss, you're going to want to offset those short-term capital gains because they're going to be taxed at a high level. And also, you got to be careful if you are on Medicare and if you have large capital gains, you don't want to be pushed into a higher bracket for paying your Medicare premiums, because Medicare premiums can go as high as almost $600 depending on your income. And a lot of people get bumped up into higher Medicare rates. So if that is you and you don't expect that to happen the following year, you're going to want to argue with Social Security, because when they see your tax return, and what your income is, you don't want to get bumped into a higher Medicare tax bracket. There's six of them, and they can go all the way up from about $140 to about $590. So you want to be careful there. Now, let me tell you about if you're unfortunately having more losses than you have gains. If you do take your losses, you can carry them forward in the following years, so you can use them all up in the future. If you want to offset your ordinary income and you have losses, there's a limitation of only $3,000 against ordinary income. And I want to talk about something that most people aren't aware of, and that is something called an opportunity zone. What happened is, under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, beginning in 2018, investors have been able to defer or reduce or wipe out their capital gains taxes by investing the realized capital gains in any of there's roughly close to 9,000 opportunity zones in the U.S. These are typically low-income areas in need of economic stimulus. The program allows for a cost basis on reinvested capital gains to be stepped up by 10% when the investment is held for 5 years. After 10 years, all capital gains in the investment become exempt from taxes. However, one thing to bear in mind, the 10% step up on your cost basis in 5 years expires this year. So investing in what we call opportunity zones is another thing. And the other thing too, this is the time of the year we always think about making charitable gifts or donations. You know, you might want to think of, if you're in a high tax bracket, and especially what I call bracket creep. So let's say you're close to moving into the next tax bracket. Let me give you what those are. Right now, we have a 24% bracket, and after the 24% bracket, it jumps up to the 32% bracket. So if you're about ready to jump into that higher bracket of 32%, if you're in California, you're probably in a 9 or 10% bracket. So you could be over 40%. One of the things you could do is make some charitable gifts and get a tax deduction for that. Use that to offset and bring your income down. So charitable gifts are a very good area. The other thing you want to think about, and we're doing a lot of this, Chris, with clients right now, is Roth conversions. Because in this latest tax bill, they want to do away with backdoor Roth. That's a way to get around the exemption on your income in contributing to a Roth. You do it basically through your 401k. There's a couple of hoops you have to go through, but it's a way where you can put as much as $30,000, $40,000 a year into a Roth and have kept there for 5 years. That's all tax-free. And it's one of our favorite tools for tax planning. And let me tell you why. Let's say, you take a blue chip stock. Let's take IBM, Chevron, any of the big blue chip stocks that are paying 4, 5% dividends. I know IBM's paying 5.8. You put IBM in a Roth and it becomes tax-free, you're getting 5.8% tax-free income. We have several clients in that stock in their Roths, and they're getting, Chris, almost 6% tax-free. There's no way you could get anything close to that in the municipal bond market. I mean, you'd be lucky if you got 1.5% on a tax-free bond. But here's a way, by converting these high-dividend stocks like your AT&Ts, your Verizons, your oil stocks, some of the big blue chips and the dogs of the Dow. There's 10 of them, and they all have yields of over 3%. You put them inside a Roth, and all of a sudden you have tax-free income. But here's the catch. They want to do away with Roth conversions. They also want to place a limitation in this bill on IRAs at $10 million. So if you've been a good investor, you've been diligent, you've grown your IRA, well, the administration doesn't want you to have more than $10 million. Otherwise, they're going to force you to start taking distributions and paying taxes regardless of age. So there are a number of things that they want to do away with. And I would say, Chris, one of the things that we've seen with Obama, we've seen it with now Biden, and we also saw it with Trump. Because remember, Trump got rid of the SALT deduction. They limited property tax deductions to $10,000. We'll talk about that and how some states are getting around that. But they got rid of your state tax deduction. So even Donald Trump got rid of itemized deductions for a lot of Americans. They substituted the standard deduction. They bumped it up to $12,000 and $24,000, a little bit higher now with inflation. But what we've seen with the presidents, beginning with Obama, carried on with Trump, and now with Biden, they're doing away with itemized deductions. They're doing away with things like they wanted to do away with, in an earlier iteration of the tax bill, they wanted to do away with 1031 exchanges on real estate. So they're going after a lot of these things that we've been able to use in tax planning. So that's why you really want to talk to your advisor about Roth conversions, backdoor Roths if you're self-employed and you have a 401k plan, because eventually they're going to take these away.
So for all of you listening, again, if you'd like to get in touch with any of our wealth advisors on some of the things that we're doing here for clients, given what we discussed today, you can always give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can go to our website, financialsense.com, and click where it says contact us. Jim, you were talking with Chris Hennessy in last week's segment about estate plans and then also converting from an S corp to a C corp. That seems to be a pretty key component of things to do before year end, or at least in terms of tax planning. Can you tell us about each of those items?
Yeah, right now the exemption is $11.7 million, meaning that basically a husband and wife could give up to $23 million away without any estate taxes. Now, this is the year if you want to do it, because in the administration's proposal, they want to drop the exemption down to 5.5. And by the way, if you give away 11 million or 11 and a half or 11.7 million, and you're thinking, well, you'll use the exemption from one spouse, and next year you'll use the other one when it drops down to 5.5. If they pass that, it doesn't work. They'll look at the 11.7 you gave away this year and say you're one and done. So you got to be careful there. But nonetheless, if you're Mickey Megabucks and you got a very large estate, especially if you run a small business, you might want to think of doing some transferring of stock ownership to the family. If you want the family to carry on, we're doing that with a lot of our clients right now, where we're getting the businesses valued. And then what we're doing is we're putting closely held stock and we're transferring it to the heirs to get some of this out of the estate and reduce the tax liability of passing on the corporation to your heirs or your children. So that's something you want to do. The other thing is right now the corporate tax rate on C corps is 21%. Now the Biden administration wants 26.5. Some people say 25, but that's one thing that is in agreement. And it's still in there, raising corporate taxes. But you know, even if you have to pay 26% tax, it's better than the 44% tax that you would pay in an S corp. Now, one of the things this latest bill does is they add a Medicare tax or the Obamacare tax of 3.8% on excess income that you earn in an S corp. So right now, let's say you have an S corp, you pay yourself a salary. Anything that's profits above what you take out in the business is taxable back to you. It flows directly to you on your tax return. They want to get rid of that 20% exemption, and they also want to add another 3.8% Obama tax on your excess income. So by converting to a C corp, this is one way to get around it. And another thing about C corps, when you invest in high dividend paying stocks in a C corp, you can exclude 70% of the dividends that you earn in a C corp from taxation. So let me give you an example of what this might turn out to be. So let's say that you have, I'm going to take a stock, IBM pays 5.8%. Let's just round that off to 6. Okay, 6% dividend, you exclude 70% of that from taxation. So that leaves 1.8% of the 6% taxable. You take 21% of that. That's 0.4. Chris, it's less than 0.5%. So if you're investing in IBM and a C corp, you get 5.8%. You pay 0.5% in taxes, you get 5.3% after tax. And once again, if you have that in a Roth, it's 5.8% tax free. So now, what some of the states have done, because there's an argument right now, In the current provision, they want to raise the SALT deduction to $80,000 and cap it at that. The Bernie Sanders wing, the AOC wing, is against that. So there's an argument going back and forth on the SALT deduction. But you have states like New York and California, New Jersey, some of these high tax states are saying, no, we need that SALT deduction because we have people leaving the state. For example, in our own state of California, Chris, it was last year was the first year you had more people leaving the state. And the reason they're leaving it, high cost of living, high taxes, high regulation, brownouts, high crime rates, and all kinds of things like that. So a lot of these governors in these high tax states are urging their representatives in Congress to put back the SALT deduction so they don't lose as many of their high income residents because at least they can deduct it. Now, our own state of California has done a workaround. So if you're living in California, be sure to talk to your advisor. California's pass-through entity tax workaround, they have it so you can deduct 100% of your state taxes and your property taxes on your federal tax return. So California is one of the states that have come up with a workaround. So I just wanted to pass that on. But you better do it real quick and talk to your advisor because, you know, we're running out of time here. What are we? December 6th. So you don't have too many days to do this. So you want to get your investment advisor, your financial planner, your CPA, whoever you're dealing with on taxes, and talk about some of the things that we're suggesting here. I mean, this is some of the things we're doing.
Jim, as we started today's segment, you know, we talked about how under every administration, tax laws change, which makes it very hard from a planning perspective. But of course, you need to adapt, you need to make changes and updates. In that case, what do you think we should expect to see in the months ahead as far as how things will finalize when it comes to some of these numbers that you're looking at?
Well, the one thing the Bernie Sanders AOC wing do not want the SALT deductions for upper income Americans. So there's talk of limiting that to anybody that's making more than $400,000 if you're single, $450,000 if you're married. They want to raise the SALT deduction to $80,000. However, that's not going to keep your high income people. Usually the high income people that are leaving states like California, New York are people that are making seven figures a year. They own McMansions. You know, I'm thinking of the one neighborhood in San Diego, Rancho Santa Fe, where the average home is over $10 million. Well, Chris, if you have a $10 million home in California, you're paying $100,000 a year in property taxes alone, and you're only getting $10,000 to deduct. So raising the SALT deduction to $80,000, but you cap it if you make $400,000 or $450,000, is really not going to help. But that's probably, if they do get the SALT deduction added back at $80,000, they're going to cap it based on your income. Two other things that they're looking at now are two surcharges. One is 5%, one is 8%. In addition to raising the income tax rates back up to 39.6, and remember, on top of the 39.6, you have to pay an additional 3.8% Medicare tax. So let's round that off and say the top income tax bracket is 44%. Well, they also want to add a 5% surcharge if you make $10 million a year and an 8% surcharge if you make $25 million a year. And that includes, by the way, capital gains. So if you're Mickey Megabucks and you've got some huge capital gains, maybe you bought Microsoft or Apple or Amazon that you bought 5-6 years ago and you're taking your gains, that gets added up in that $10 million and $25 million figure. The other thing they want to do is they want to cap IRA to $10 million. So if you have more than that, no matter what your age is, they would force you to start taking mandatory distributions to work that down. They also want to eliminate the backdoor Roth, and they also want to prohibit Roth conversions if you have income of $400,000 single and $450,000. So you can see this trend. It began with Obama, continued with Trump. It's now continuing with Biden. Who knows, maybe even the next president. Chris, they've been going after ways that you can shelter income, whether it's devices like Roths, whether it's pension contributions, whether it's capital gains. They're really going after, really what they want to do is take the majority of your income in taxation. And I've heard several in the more, I would say, progressive side of the Democratic Party. They want to get tax rates back up to 70% where they were before Reagan became president. So that's where they're going down the road, where the government's going to take the majority of what you make in terms of income. Because, folks, we just crossed $29 trillion in debt and climbing. If this bill goes through, we're going to be at 40, I would say 40 trillion by the end of the Biden administration. So that's not too far, only 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, and as we've been discussing on our show, with debt levels this high around the globe, not just in the U.S., I mean, really the easiest way to deal with these high debts is to inflate them away. And so now we are seeing, essentially, as we've mentioned many times, the implementation of modern monetary theory, where you can print money. And the only downside to that, or the only damage that you have to control, is inflation. And with that, you manage inflation levels by raising taxes. So all of these things are coming together in a very clear fashion.
Yeah, you know, the cruelest thing about these policies is it's creating inflation. The official inflation rate is 6.2%. It's probably twice that if you back out hedonics and substitution, the way they manipulate the consumer price index. And I don't need to tell anybody listening to this program, they're seeing it in the stores, their monthly bills, their utilities, their insurance premiums at the gas pump. And that's the cruelest tax of all, is the inflation tax. It hits the middle class and hits the poorest, and especially those who don't have the means. For example, now if you are invested in the markets, you have a 401k program, you own a home, you are a beneficiary of inflation. Inflation is driving the price of your house up. Inflation is driving the price of markets up, so you're benefiting in your 401k or your personal investments. But Chris, if you don't have a home, you don't own a home, you just rent, or you don't have any investment income or any pension income, you're hit hard. You mean, you can't go to your boss and say, hey, look, gasoline prices are up over 40-50% this year. I need a 20-30% raise just to break even so I can pay these costs. You can't do that. So, you know, you think about that, Chris. If you don't have home ownership, if you don't have any money in the markets, you're not benefiting from inflation. Inflation is really harming your household budget, because how do you pay for, you know, you think of gas prices up 60%. Food prices up 15-20%, depending on what you're buying. I mean, I can't even believe the cost of beef at Costco. I mean, I bought 2 ribeye steaks last week. Chris, $70 for 2 ribeye steaks. I felt like I was going to Ruth Chris for dinner. I mean, it was just...
Well, Jim, it's crazy. I can sell my truck that I bought during COVID, right after COVID hit, for more than what I bought it at. I mean, that's never happened before. Used cars depreciate immediately. Any car depreciates immediately, and now it's selling for more. I mean, that has to do with the supply chain and demand for cars and in the face of a supply shortage. But I mean, it just goes to show you that for those of you, like you said, that either are renting or need to buy a new car or buying food and gas, it's just everything is up and it's skyrocketed.
Oh, you can see it even in the boat market. And some people are telling me that even in the RV market. So, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. But it is the inflation tax that hurts the poor and the middle class the most. And that's why, you know, this policy, you know, inflation, folks, is a very simple story. The administration, the economists will give you all kinds of wackadoodle explanations for it, but they don't make sense. Simplest way to understand inflation: too much money chasing too few goods. It's that simple.
And when it comes to the too few goods side, although I think we all admit we are going to see some level of normalcy or healing when it comes to the global supply chain, eventually, the too much money part, that's going to be with us for some time, because, again, reiterating this bigger point that we've been making on our show and theme, there is a direct policy of pursuing inflation in order to erode the value of outstanding debt. And so we are going to be seeing this for years ahead, and that's going to involve lots of money printing as well. So this is something you need to prepare for. There's a number of things that we are doing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management for our clients, given what we discussed today. So again, if you'd like to speak with any of our wealth advisors and to see how we can assist you, give us a call at 888-486-3939. 3-9.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Planning. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.